what sets apart the Toy Story trilogy is that amazing ability not only to do animation but to tell a good, important, moving, funny story. Can you talk about that?
Sure. Well, of course, it's always been our mandate at the studio to tell good stories. That's an easy thing to say, is your mandate, and it's another thing to actually do it. Each time we set about making a new film, there's, of course, never any guarantee we're going to be able to pull it off. But we try to prime ourselves as much as possible. In my case, you know, I brought on a great screenwriter whose work I respected, even though he was unproduced at the time we hired him, and that's Michael Arndt, who wrote Home of Sunshine. And just our team internally, you know, we consider ourselves storytellers first and foremost, then filmmakers, and then animators. You know, we've been lucky enough now to have made 11 films in a row that have received some degree of acclaim for their storytelling. And but the pressure is always on to repeat that somehow. I mean, I think it's easy for people to say, oh, Pixar, they know what they're doing. Well, we kind of don't know what we're doing. We just give ourselves the time to figure it out every time we make a new movie, because it's a sloppy, messy process, and we go down a lot of blind alleys along the way. We're just lucky enough to work at a studio led from the top down by creative people, by John Lasseter, and we've always been given the room to make mistakes and to screw up early and often. And that allows us to hopefully ultimately get to a place where the story is tight as a drum and it looks effortless, even though it's anything
right. And do you think there was actually more pressure on Toy Story 3 because you had those two big successes and you had all your characters already gathered, and so then you had to make a story leap. And what would you say the story leap is here?
Well, to respond to your question about the pressure, absolutely. I mean, Darla knows full well that literally for the first year of production, every morning I woke up and wanted to vomit over the side of my bed. Because I was under, it sounds horrible, but it is absolutely true. It was a huge amount of pressure, not only to make the 11th Pixar film after that string of 10 great films,
right,
but especially making a sequel to Toy Story. The last thing I wanted was to make a grafted on sequel that felt like, the Bad News Bears Go to Japan.
Ooh.
You know, it was just completely unnecessary.
Going up over the side.
So what we ultimately decided to do, the entire cast hanging on it. What we ultimately decided to do was think of the films as kind of a whole, right?
So there's a larger story arc that's...
Right, even though that's not actually what happened. Mm-hmm. I mean, hopefully people watch the three films and it feels like, you know, 15 years ago we had these three films plotted out. That wouldn't be the truth. But with each new film that we've done in the Toy Story trilogy, we've tried to think of everything holistically. We've tried to imagine, you know, if we were telling one a giant tale in the life of these toys and their owner, Andy, what would that be? And that ultimately, you know, led us to setting this film when we did at this critical point where Andy is grown up and about to head off to college. And everyone, the empty nest moment, but for everyone, for the toys, for Andy, for the parents, it's a time of great change and great transition. And, you know, part of living life is facing these uneasy points of transition, and it's always interesting to see how we deal with those moments, and we thought it would be interesting to see how the characters in the film dealt with them.
I'd almost go a little bit further, actually, and say that, you know, these films, this trilogy, which is, to my mind, one of the finest trilogies ever made, really gets to an existential point of view, and I don't know if that was part of the plan. The first film is about a child's imagination, and the second film is sort of, and this is obviously speaking offhandedly, but the second film is about parenthood and letting go. This third film is about facing the unknown, facing things we don't face, facing death. How much part of that was the process early on, and did that just sort of evolve?
Well, we planned this out from the very beginning in intricate detail, right?
It's always going to be about
you lived your life, and then, you know, you're 10 years old or whatever, you have different issues, and so those issues inform the story, right?
Well, we do talk about a lot of these things, but it never gets pretentious in our minds. I mean, we try to stay pretty grounded. Ultimately, we're trying to make an entertaining film, but we do want it to be full of emotion as well. So we do, I mean, you know, God knows there were entire days where we were really hung up and not making breakthroughs in story, and we were talking about a lot of these issues. But to try to manually, wedge them into the story would be going about it the wrong way. I mean, we try to work out the story, but then have the characters behave in a truthful manner throughout. And it's always wonderful for us after the fact to have people like yourself talk about what you got out of the film, because sometimes it is what we were trying to do, and oftentimes it's not. And I mean, that's the beauty of film and storytelling, right? That everyone's going to have their own interpretation, and none of them are wrong, even if it's not what we intended.
And first and foremost, we're trying to entertain. I mean, that we think about that all the time, because if we're not capturing the audience in an entertaining way, we're not telling really good stories with these characters that people completely empathize and identify with, then any of these things will go by the wayside. So it's always interesting that we lead with that, to me. And all the other things kind of fall into place if you keep your eye on that prize.
Right. On one hand, it's easy to say, oh, we had everything in place, we have this world, and we have these characters, and in some regards, that's true. But it's also difficult to do something new and interesting with them, because each time we've made a Toy Story, we felt like we've ended the story. And we felt like the character's gone on a journey and has learned something and has changed in some small or great way. And so it's hard when you're saying, okay, well, let's make a third one. What is that journey going to be now? What more do they have to learn? And what we decided for three was, at the end of Toy Story 2, the toys have actually made their peace with the fact that Andy's going to grow up someday and that their time with him is limited. And again, they seemingly made peace with that. But we started to think, well, there are a lot of things in life that we know are going to happen someday. We're going to lose our parents someday. You know, our children are going to grow up. And you can say, well, you know, I'll be able
death
to deal
is
with
inevitable.
That. Exactly.
Here we are, Toy Story 3, death is inevitable.
Everything's inevitable, right? It's a whole other thing to face that day.
Right.
And we felt that Woody and the others were maybe being a little naive at the end of Toy Story 2, and we thought we would just have to face head on, what their greatest fears were.
But if there's a sentiment, or if there is a sensibility to these movies, it is you go for always talking up to your audience, and I think that always comes through. And this kind of film, this kind of sentiment comes through in this.
Well, yeah, like Lee mentioned before, we are filmmakers first, and we want to make films for everybody. And we never have thought of ourselves as a children's film studio. We've always thought of ourselves as a film studio, knowing that because of the medium of animation that kids will be coming to it, so we're responsible in that regard. But we've never pandered to kids. We've always made films that we would want to go see and stories that we would want to be told.
And we just make sure they're appropriate for kids, because we know they're going to be part of the audience.
And that's a real danger in watching all these films. You and I talked last night about there's that one tweaky moment where Barbie says to Ken, "Nice ascot," which is about as far as this one goes in being dirty. But there's so many movies that you see, so many animated movies where they're trying to appeal to an adult audience by winking and being dirty.
A little criticism for that line from some people, but it felt like it was too good to pass up. It was just like for that situation and that moment that they were in, it just
it made you laugh.
It made us laugh.
And
a lot of kids don't even know what an ascot is, so it kind of went over.
A lot of kids don't know Cool Hand Luke either. The Great Escape.
That's right.
But what do you think? I mean, this is a master class on animation. So what are some of the problems in telling a story that's peculiar or that's distinct to animation? What were some of the mountains you had to climb?
Specific to animation, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I feel like we have so much more control in animation than in live action. I actually come from a live action background. I never worked in animation at all before I came to Pixar.
Right.
So I know what it's like. I was an editor. I was a film editor.
Right.
And I went to film school at USC. So I know what it's like to, just have the raw materials you shot on set and have to somehow craft a story out of what you have. We live in a world, Pixar, where we can do whatever we want at any time. At the last minute, if I have an idea that involves, a huge crowd scene, we can probably pull it off if we feel it's vital for the story. So it's almost more a matter of, just maintaining some discipline in your storytelling, because you can't do anything, and because you can, make changes at the 11th hour. I don't know. How would you say it's?
You don't have to worry about rain. So in short, you don't have to worry about it being rained out or bad weather.
No,
or, you
never have to deal with that.
Right.
It is an intricate puzzle to put together, make an animated film. This film is extraordinarily detail oriented. I think it has more characters, 50 speaking parts. It has thousands of background characters, and So, you know, in live action, you probably use a lot of the special effects to create the crowds and so forth. And we didn't. We didn't skimp any corners on this while still maintaining a really great budget. So.
Yeah. I actually know how to answer your question now.
Okay. Yeah, you have a minute.
Think about it.
I know, it's hard.
But really, the biggest challenge for us is to create the illusion of spontaneity. Because the film is so crafted bit by bit, moment by moment, over the course of the 4 years that it takes to make the movie, we have to work very hard to have it feel effortless, to have it feel spontaneous. The actors, Tom Hanks, Tim Allen, all the rest of them, none of them were ever in the same room as each other at the same time. All of the recording sessions were done one at a time, piecemeal over the course of the film. And part of our job in the editing room is to create that feeling of spontaneity, to have the characters interrupt each other and not finish their thoughts and have the same kind of natural dialogue that you would have if you and I are talking right now and you're interjecting and talking while I'm talking. We have to craft that by hand. And the same thing holds true in the animation. You want to feel like these moments aren't pre-designed. You want to feel like the characters are that they're having little tics and they're reacting in very small ways to what's being said or what's happening, and that they have an inner life beyond what they're emoting on the outside.
Right.
And we have to dissect that down to a very tiny level. And so there's a constant push-pull of again crafting at that microscopic level, but still having the story don't feel like it's just unfolding naturally and organically.
Which it does.